Real life stories of real life men. These are the many voices of the Brothers in Blue Reentry Program. Real voices.
I first went to prison when I was 15 for a conspiracy to commit burglary. And that was just, man, young and just being crazy with my buddies. And we weren't doing nothing but drinking and drugging. And we burglarized a sale barn. I ended up doing a couple of years for it in prison with the one to five. And for real, when I paroled out that time, back then there was no help for guys when you were getting out of prison. There was none whatsoever. They would dump you out. They dumped me off. They paroled me to a hotel on South Broadway in Wichita in 1992, which, if you're familiar with that area, was nothing but prostitutes and drugs. I mean, that's what it was notorious for, from Broadway to Lincoln, and I was right off Broadway. And so within 2 months, I came back on unlawful possession of a firearm, another 1 to 5. And then I ended up coming back just a few months later. Within 6-8 months, I caught an attempted rape case. It was a sex with a minor. I can't really go into details in it because it involved other people, and I probably wouldn't be respectful of them. Ended up getting out in 1998. I bailed out. I ran, absconded from parole. When I did, I found a guy who had a robbery he knew about in Kansas City. So we went ahead and hit that robbery and hit another one down in Wichita. Ended up spending a couple months at the casino in Tunica, Mississippi, and man, I just played myself out. I finally got sick to death of it and ended up coming back to Wichita and turning myself in. I was just tired of it. I knew I was probably about a week from death. I had been spent that whole time. I'd had like $20,000 out of the robberies, and I spent pretty much that whole time just getting high. And I was pretty close to death by that time.
Our inmate has dug a hole for himself. What at first seemed like youthful fun has escalated into a lifestyle pattern. He is now what is often labeled a career criminal. What led to this downward spiral? Is a felon inherently wired to disregard the law, or is immorality based on experience, or could it be a mixture of both? Each prisoner has their own personal testimony that provides insight as to why they've ended up where they are. As for this inmate, when recalling his childhood, the word that encompasses his feeling is
violent, extremely violent. My stepdad was a Vietnam vet. He was a tunnel rat in Vietnam. He wasn't all there. He was extremely violent with us boys. See, he always told us that you were respectful to women. I guess that means you can beat the daylights out of any man you come across, but women you better be respectful to. And this was, to me, it didn't make sense. It didn't coincide with his actions, what he was saying. And so I never really bought into it. That's why, one of the reasons why I treated women so bad is I knew my mom knew that my stepdad was beating the snot out of us. I knew she knew it. You know, she wouldn't mind putting hands on you, not in a Christian way either. I mean, she wouldn't mind putting hands on you. And so she would act like she didn't know that my stepdad was just whooping the daylights out of us. She'd take my sisters and they'd go off into town to Pizza Hut or something, and we're left there to, you know, get beat on by this crazy man. And for real, what it made me realize, or what it made me begin to, the thought it made me begin to develop in my mind, was that you can't count on any woman. A woman is always going to look out for herself, and so therefore, why look out for them? She's going to betray me sooner or later. My sisters, I couldn't understand, because they knew if I did something wrong and they told on me, I was going to get whooped. And I would do something minor and they would tell on me. I couldn't fathom, do you know what's going to happen to me? Don't you understand this? And then so afterwards, when I'm laying in my bed and you come to me and you tell me, you know, you're all crying. Why are you? You knew this was going to happen. There was a time I wasn't able to go to school for 2 weeks. And my sister came to me and she said, I'm sorry, I didn't know that this would happen. Yeah, see, you did. You did know this was going to happen because it's not the first time. And you chose to tell mom anyway. And it blew my mind back then when I was a kid, because you're supposed to be blood. That's supposed to mean something there. And what I began to realize was, or what I began to believe, the false belief I started having was that everybody's in it for themselves. Nobody cares about you nearly as much as they care about themselves. And so I just started making sure that I always put me first. And if I needed to use you to accomplish what I needed to do, that was what I was going to do. Because if I didn't, you're going to use me anyway. Or you're going to betray me. And that's just how I lived my life until I came to Brothers in Blue.
This mistrust has led to a pattern of broken relationships and an overwhelming sense of isolation in our inmates' life. Isolation breeds contempt and despondency. Without a stake in life, people to love, people to trust, our inmate found himself looking at a 13-year stretch in prison. Suspicion and anger are norms in prison, and instead of reforming, our prisoner allowed that to flourish once back in prison for the fourth time.
My time in prison before I came to Brothers in Blue was outrageous. I was violent. I was drugged out. There was nothing positive going on with me at all. I had spent all that time in prison, but I had never tried to increase who I was as a person. I had never tried to build on my relational skills, my people skills, speaking skills, writing, nothing. All I did was sit in my cell and watch TV, get high, smoke, make hooch once in a while. You know, and we thought the funnest thing in the world was just being in a cell house where all your buddies were and you could just kick it with them all day, hollering back and forth to each other. And then I found Brothers in Blue.
Human beings innately desire to be nurtured and to be loved. Many prisoners, including this one, have been deprived of this emotional intimacy that we often take for granted. Our inmate took the step of joining Brothers in Blue Reentry, which offers curriculum and ministries that help to foster that ever so elusive comfort that comes from true human connection.
Regularly have, there's about 5-6 volunteers that come in on a regular basis every week. Now we also have, there's Beauty for Ashes, they come up on Wednesdays for revival, and then you have about 10 or 15 of them. And every time they come, they bring it. The worship is awesome. They have amazing singers. They usually have, some of the guys on their ministry team are actually guys who have done time. They get the opportunity to tell their story, and these are guys that have been out for a while and have been successful out there, because to me, not coming back to prison and still serving God, you're successful out there. I mean, for real, that's success. And what they just have a passion for prison ministry. They really do, especially the co-founders, Dirk and Gina. Well, not especially, but the co-founders, Dirk and Gina, they, you can tell when them and Karen and Jeff and Wilburn, when they all come in, the atmosphere in the Brothers in Blue Reentry basement changes. Because everybody knows Beauty's for Ashes is there, Beauty for Ashes is there, and everybody's psyched about it. They're pumped because they know it's just, they spread love wherever they go. It's awesome being around them.
So what has changed in this inmate? Reformation is not a simple process, yet he's adamant that he's accomplished it. He claims Brothers in Blue Reentry has changed his life. So wherein lies its effectiveness? What has it provided to alter him in a positive manner. How exactly has he changed?
Well, the difference, the difference is like being in the bathtub or being in the middle of the Atlantic Ocean. I mean, that's how drastic the differences are. This program helps gain work ethic, helps give us a work ethic, because, and it also, we understand that we have to be proactive in our own change. There's different courses you can take through this that are elective courses that you have to be proactive in seeking that class out. If you want change, you have to be in the middle of it. We have to understand that we can't just set our lives aside and just run. We have to take an active part in our lives and in that change. And that's what Brothers in Blue Reentry, that's what it teaches us, is it teaches us how to do that. Well, in the elective classes, we have a volunteer who comes in, Shane, and he does Reclaiming Surrendered Ground. Oaks of Righteousness is also an elective class. The Truth Project. Truth Project is a DVD class that an inmate teaches, and which is really cool that inmates are leading some of these classes. And it's, most of them are a couple, 2-3 months long, and they're totally voluntary. You need to give up yard time to be able to come to these classes and participate in them. There's homework just like in regular classes. You watch videos, you discuss. So there's three of them. They also have Toastmasters, where learning to speak. A lot of guys, they come in here and they don't know how to talk to somebody in an interview. They don't know how to talk without saying every 2 seconds, which hopefully I haven't been doing. But Toastmasters teaches you how to talk. I mean, that sounds simple, but I mean, they teach you how to talk correctly. And whenever you're going into an interview, people think about that. The guy who's interviewing you is listening to the way you're talking to him. You know, if you sound like you have about a 7th grade education, you're probably not going to do very well. But if you have a 7th grade education, but you sound like you have a college education, it can help you out. And that's, and again, they're volunteer-led. Those are volunteer-led, like Toastmasters. The impact our volunteers have is just, there's no way to accurately judge it, to accurately measure how much impact they have on the guys here.
Okay, our inmate has seen progress in himself, but he's anything but complacent. He strives to better himself and to subsequently improve the world around him. But now it's time to take it to the next level, and that's why he decides to minister to other brothers in the program and to general population to see if he can affect the world around him.
Seen guys come down here with no desire to change nothing. This is just, they want to do it because they see it as easy time. And the more the positive, the more that they soak up that positive, you start seeing changes in their lives. The next thing you know, they're on their knees at revival, ready to give their lives to Christ. And that happens because of the atmosphere. I had a guy, I've known this guy for 15 years, and we're in the chow hall. And now you know how it is in the chow hall. There's sections in the chow hall, usually divided by races. Well, he sits at this table, and a black guy sits down there with him, and this guy, he's an Asatru, which is like the white supremacist guys, or white separatists. And a black guy sits down at his table, and this little Mexican guy sits at his table, and then a guy with a sex case sits at his table. And he looks over at me, and I'm just smiling. And because I know that inside, he's probably boiling a little bit, like, how dare these guys sit with me? And all three of the guys were Brothers in Blue guys. And after they left, he came over to the table I was sitting at, and he said, you know, that's your guys' fault, right? I said, what are you talking about? He said, that never happened before Brothers in Blue. Before Brothers in Blue came around, you didn't see these other races sitting with each other. They stayed divided. He said, and now everybody, they're all mixed together. And I was like, yeah, that is our fault. Isn't it great? Don't you love it? You know, you just experienced more in that lunch than you have sitting with the same guys who sit with their chest puffed out because they got to be tough in prison. These guys don't care. They just want to sit down and have lunch and have some conversation. I said, you probably gained more of that than you would have seen with anybody else. And he just laughed. And he knew it was true. He just laughed and left. But it was just, I thought it was cool because that's something that Brothers in Blue, that's an impact Brothers in Blue has had on the penitentiary. You know, we don't look at who's sitting at that table, whether they're black, white, Mexican. We don't look at that. That's our brother over there. He's got that lanyard on.
Change is undeniably positive, in theory. But where's the failsafe? Our inmate gets out in 5 months. Isn't he scared that he's doomed to fulfill the label that society stuck on him? How can he overcome this social stigma?
Not nearly the trepidation I thought I would feel.
Being released into society
because
with a fresh outlook.
I've been out many times. But I know that this time, I'm ready. I know the only fears I have, and they're not even fears, I don't fear coming back to prison. Because my mindset is different. The way I think is different. I'm not worried about going out there and breaking any laws, and that's the only thing that's going to send me back to prison. It's doing something illegal, and I can't picture myself doing that whatsoever. So what's hard for me is it'll be 13 years by the time I get out. A lot's changed in 13 years. Just catching up with the world, catching up with the mentally, it's going to be huge. You know, and that's what's so awesome about Brothers in Blue is Brothers in Blue has set me up and with a mentor. And the thing is it's not just that they have sent me up with one mentor, but through the Oaks of Righteousness and Beauties for Ashes, I have developed a really good friendship with one of the people in there. So it's like I have two mentors. But the mentor, I meet with the mentor every week on Thursday, and I'll tell you what. We talk about what it's like out there, what I need to do to prepare myself, and being able to touch bases with a guy who is a professional out there. I mean, he's a professional man who has been through a lot in life, and he has wisdom and knowledge that he's willing to share with me. And it's been huge in my preparation for getting out in September. I mean, it's... My mentor has been awesome. And just, it's really cool because he's probably not somebody I would have met otherwise. But being able to meet him through the program and being able to have an open mind saying, okay, you know what, this guy isn't here because he has to be here. He doesn't have to be here. He doesn't have to be my mentor. He chooses to be my mentor because he cares and he wants to see me do good when I hit the streets. And he wants to help me prepare for that day, and it's to me, that's awesome. It's pretty cool.
So there you have it. I'd love to give you more resolution in the story, but life rarely works that way. As far as our inmate's concerned, he has resolution. There's no doubt in his mind that he's prepared for success. He will undoubtedly have more reentry tools at his disposal this time around, but his new vigor for life will be his greatest asset on the road ahead. It's so easy to label him as an inmate, as I've done throughout this entire process, but he is a man, and soon he'll be a neighbor and fellow citizen. To dismiss his change as a distant occurrence with no effect on society would be short-sighted. This man has undergone a renewal. And it is a big deal. Thank you for joining us on Real Voices. Please stop by next week for our next installment.